This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk, and we have a very, very special author today, New York Times best-selling author Karen Slaughter, one of my favorites, and her new book is called The Good Daughter, and it's got a really black cover with a candle or something that woman is holding. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I love to describe the covers. This is such an interesting cover.
It's a match.
It's a match. Oh, yes, you're right, it is, but there's like a flame there. I thought it was a candle, too. You're right, it is a match.
Flame. Yeah. That's a dangerous one.
You write the most incredible books. You really do. I mean, to say that you're talented is really understating this, because, I mean, I'm reading this book and I think to myself, God, this woman really knows how to write. She really knows how to tell a story. And what makes this book exceptional is the characters. The characters are what, in my mind, I mean, that's when, after I've read it, I think the characters are really what drove this book to be what it is.
Well, that's what was really kind of my purpose. You know, I love writing thrillers, and definitely there's a thriller plot, and I work really hard on that because I think it's important to play fair with the readers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all read books where, you know, we love the characters, but the plot doesn't make sense.
Right.
I'm not gonna name names, but
no.
We all know who they are.
That...
But you know, for me, I wanted to have the mystery of character. And I think with Charlie and Sam and their family, that you get the real sense that, you know, something else is going on with them. And you want to know what happens to them next.
They're such a fascinating family that even after the book is done, we want to know more. We want to know Gorgana. We want to know about Rusty. And I can't even say what happens in the book because I'll give something away. You make it impossible to talk about your book sometimes because I'm afraid I'm going to give something away that's going to get people upset. But you want to know so much about this family because they're so peculiar. Everybody in the family is peculiar. There's nobody normal in this family.
Well, you know, exactly. And I guess that comes from just how I grew up. You know, obviously I'm a Southerner. I grew up in South Georgia. I remember going to church with my grandmother, and she would introduce us to the people in town, and she would always tell us a deep, dark secret about them. Like, you know, she'd say, oh, hello, Mrs. Smith, this is my granddaughter, and I would say hello and all that. As soon as a woman left, she'd say, well, you know, she drinks, or, you know, her husband's
Typical. Here,
or something like that, you know. And it's, I guess, in a lesser degree, you could call it gossip, but it just gave me the sense that everybody has a secret. And I think that's true, you know. Some people... they don't have deep, dark secrets, but everybody has something that they're ashamed of or that they don't want other people to know about or any of these things, you know. We're all really kind of defined by the secrets we keep.
Exactly. And for years, mine was being gay, and I never wanted to tell anybody. I was brought up saying that I was going to go to hell if I did it, if I practiced that. I was going to go to hell, and that was drummed into my head.
Yeah, that's awful.
And it's an awful thing. It's an awful thing to tell anybody that they're deserving of hell because of a certain way they are, that they can't even help.
Right.
Well, that's a whole other story. We won't get into that. But but it's something that haunts you, you know, and especially when you're brought up as a Presbyterian and you have to go to church every Sunday and you have to do this and you have to do that. You can't do anything on Sunday. And, oh, it's
horrible. Well, I'm sure some people there were getting divorced and wearing mixed fibers, which, you know, by all rights, you should have stoned them.
That's right. What, I mean, if we even had a book by you that nobody had any secrets, it would be a pretty boring book, wouldn't it?
I think so. You know, even Jack Reacher has his secrets, right?
That's right.
I think that's what makes characters interesting is that, you know, when I'm writing this or with my Real Will Trent series especially, I know so many things about the characters that even readers who have been reading about him for years don't know. And that's, I think, what keeps authors interested in writing about the characters, too.
Karen, you're so good at what you do. I mean, and I don't just say that lightly because I'm very picky about what I read, and what I read has to be good. This is a great thriller. It's a great characterization. Like I said before, there's so much in this book and so many twists and turns and so many things that happen that you, I can't even describe them because I love to talk about them, but I can't talk about them. And
yeah.
And it's frustrating because this is the kind of book you want to talk about with other people. You want to say, well, what do you think of it? And what, you know, and there's so much about this book that's rich. I mean, and you, the way you write, I think to myself, well, this must have taken her a long time to write because there's so much to this book.
Well, you know, most of my writing takes place in my head. And so by the time I sit down to actually work on it, I've pretty much figured out what I want to say. But just from the concept of this, you know, it started with the character of Gamma, who's the mother. And she's kind of an opinionated, very intelligent woman. She worked at Fermilab and at NASA in the 50s and 60s and had to put up with being a woman in science during that time period. I mean, not that it's great now for women in STEM, but it was a hell of a lot harder back then.
Mm-hmm.
And she moved back to a very small town to take care of her parents when they got sick, because that's what women were supposed to do. And, you know, she fell in love with this rapscallion who's a lawyer named Rusty, and she had two daughters. But, you know, there's the sense that she gave up something and that she's not particularly happy about it. And also that there's a reason why she left this town that she grew up in, because she doesn't quite belong there. You know, as a society, we're really wired to appreciate men who are visionaries and driven and very intelligent and aren't ashamed to let you know that they're smart. But for women, it's a different story, especially in small towns. Those are sort of things that make you stick out as unfamiliar or as an other.
Exactly. I just love the characters. I mean, when I read a book, I have to feel like I know these characters. It can't just be these cardboard people that, oh, I know that kind of a person. I've read this kind of a book before. Every character's got to be different, and you do it so well with every book that you write. And I think to myself, boy, that's got to be tough to make every character unique, to make something about that character unique. And a lot of this book's about happiness, finding happiness in your life. Is that, obviously, you're pretty happy right now because you're very successful. You're doing what you want to do. You've got to be somewhat happy.
Well, you know, I think that there's a difference between feeling useful and being happy. And there's overlap sometimes, and sometimes there's not, right?
Right.
But I think usefulness is more important than happiness, right? Because it gives us a sense that we're doing something. Because somebody can have everything they want in the world, you know, be a bazillionaire and fly on private jets or whatever, but if they feel that they're not useful, then it doesn't really matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Gamma is struggling with when we first meet her, you know. And there's an O'Connor quote that I started off the book with, Flannery O'Connor, where she talks about stalking joy, you know, as if it's an animal she has to trap and tame because the joy is so elusive to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you, feeling of usefulness is something that a lot of people discount, right, because they don't necessarily want to do their jobs, or they feel like their kids don't appreciate them, or, you know, things like that. But, you know, if you look around at the things that make you happy, they're generally not material things. They're things that are rewarding to you as a person, where you feel like you're giving back.
Well, so my joy is sitting reading your book on a treadmill, which I was doing Saturday. Like, and that's a little joy to some people, but it's a great joy to me. And it's a great joy to a lot of people who love to sit and read. It's an escape. It's something that makes them feel good. It's where they can escape to, where people aren't hounding them or asking them to do something or.
Yeah. Well, you know, usefulness can come from taking care of yourself. A lot of people forget to do that, too, especially because there's always the internet or there's always something. But when you choose to do something that's purely for you, I think that can also be useful. But, you know, Gamma has two daughters, Charlie and Sam, and they kind of struggle with the same things, particularly Sam, because Sam's a really kind of off-putting person because she's so smart.
Right.
And she doesn't quite, you know, there are people we all know in our lives that kind of float above the crowd, and they're working at such a different level that we don't understand them a lot of times. And, you know, the thing is, I know people like that. I've been that person sometimes. And when I'm writing these characters, I think that I bring just an amalgamation of everybody I've ever met, and they feel real to me. I couldn't write about them if they didn't feel like real people.
Are you happy when you're writing all the time?
I am not happy all the time when I'm writing because it's very physically and emotionally draining. I think I'm happiest when I've finished a book, yeah. You know. And
you write about heavy stuff, though. I mean, really heavy things.
I do. And, you know, a lot of times people say, well, you know, was this scene where a bad thing happened, was that really hard to write? And to me, that's not the hard part, because that's very technical writing to me, because, you know, I can see the room, I can see where the chairs are, and, you know, I can see where the shooter is standing or the attacker or any of that. That all feels like a really technical kind of, like almost a textbook when I'm writing that. It's what comes after, and that's always been my focus, is how do people deal with these horrible things happening in their lives? How does someone who's sexually assaulted or in an abusive relationship or who witnesses a sudden death, how do they get up the next morning? How do they put their shoes on and go to work or go to church or interact with their family and interact with the world? I mean, that's one of the questions in this novel is, well, how do these two women deal with these horrible things that have happened to them? And, I mean, the answer is one of them, particularly one of them, is not handling it very well.
Right. And that's the whole, and what's great about this title is we wonder the whole book, who is the good daughter? Which of these two women is really the good daughter? And it goes back and forth in your mind so many times, and, you know, you're still not sure after a certain time who is, and without going into detail, but it's fascinating.
Well, as a daughter, that's a question I think I ask myself a lot. You know, am I being a good daughter to my dad? And Charlie and Sam worry about that with their mom and dad. You know, am I being a good daughter? Or they think the other sister is a good daughter. And I think that's an important question in the book. I mean, obviously, because that's the title. But I think Rusty answers it best because he says a father loves his daughter the way she needs to be loved. And I think a daughter is good to her parents in the way she needs to be good.
Right. I don't think we'll be seeing a sequel called The Good Son.
No.
Although it might be interesting. With you, it would be interesting. I mean,
I'm sure somebody will try to rip it off. There'll be lots of good sons coming up.
But, I mean, the way you expertly craft these characters is amazing to me. And I've read a lot of books, and I've read books where I don't even feel like I knew the character by the end of the book. And that is a disappointment. Or even worse, the ending is bad, and that just ruins the whole book. But you do it so well, and you've done it. How many books is this now? 17? 18?
17.
Yeah, it's a lot of books you've written.
Yes, yeah. We were a lot younger when we started this, weren't we, David?
Yeah. The scene in the farmhouse, and we can't talk too much about it, but that scene is going to live with me probably for the rest of my life.
Well, that's a compliment, you know, and I wanted to start the book with something shocking that really kind of wakes the reader up, right, and signals to them this is not going to be a detective story. I mean, not that I don't love writing detective stories, but I saw an opportunity to kind of mess with the form of a thriller, and, you know, you even have within the book the same scene from different perspectives, right?
Right.
So I think that gives you a deeper understanding. But when I set out to write this, of course I wanted to write a crime novel. I don't want to sound like one of those crime novelists who goes on about being a literary author, because I love writing crime. But it almost felt like the scope of it was more like a Victorian novel, because I wanted to talk about family and society and change and politics and poverty and the haves versus the have-nots and what is good and what is bad. And, you know, if you think about Victorian novels, they really delved into all of those themes. And to me, that's what crime fiction should always do, is hold a mirror up to society and say, this is who we are.
Mm-hmm. I would love to hear some of your fans' reactions to Charlotte. Charlotte's one of the most unusual characters you've ever written. And, you know, I feel like even after I've read the whole book, I'm not even sure I understand Charlotte completely. There's so many.
I loved her too.
There's so much complexity to her.
Yeah. I loved her so much that I wrote a short story with her called Last Breath.
Which is
digital only.
Terrific.
I think you can get it in print too. But, you know, you meet her in the book when she's 13 years old, and then you fast forward to when she's approaching her 40s. And I thought, I want to be in that in-between time for her, because, you know, I'm a woman who has experienced turning 40, and I know what special hell that is. But, you know, when you're 13 years old, and you have your life in front of you and you're a girl. I mean, it's such a particular time when you're trying to figure out who you are. And then in your 20s, you know, you're kind of, you're in college, you're trying to decide what you want to do. And then in your 30s, you're like, oh, my God, I have to be an adult now. And then at 40, you're looking back and going, what did I do wrong, you know? So I wanted to catch up with Charlie in that in-between time. And, you know, honestly, one of the things I really wanted to do in A Good Daughter was write about a woman who loves her husband. Because we don't get a lot of that. You know, husbands tend to be the bad guys in books, and, mm-hmm. and the good guy is the one who takes the wife away from the bad husband. So I created a character named Ben, who's Charlie's husband.
Oh, Ben is great.
He's in the short story, and he's in the book. And the thing I love about him is, you know, I say this a lot when I tour with my books. And there are guys there, you know, more women than men read, just in general. You're an anomaly, David. I love saying to the guys in the crowd, the sexiest thing a man can do is respect a woman. And that's what I do with Ben. It's what I do with Will Trent. I think it's why people have such a positive response to these characters, because, you know, it's just... it's something that we need to model more in real life, but especially in fiction. I'm really mindful that I want to show women and show the men who are reading that it's okay to respect women. It's okay to give them a say in what's going on in the world, and it won't be the end of the life. And my God, you know, for Ben to have this woman who's so devoted to him, even though she screwed things up to a certain degree. I mean, that was something I really wanted to write about. It's just this really good guy and his wife's having a horrible time, and she's made some mistakes. And, I mean, the question is, can they resolve these mistakes and find a way back to each other?
And, you know, Ben says something near, I mean, he's in this book. He has a scene where he's totally honest with the other characters in the scene. And he says something that I've never heard him say in a book before. And I think you know what I mean, but I don't want to give it away yet.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And
yeah, I do.
I thought to myself, oh my God, where did that come from? And it was so raw and so honest of this character. And I thought, wow, you don't see that very often in a book. I found myself laughing. But I like Ben. Ben is such a likable guy. And yet you feel his pain, too.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to have them to have conversations that men and women have, right? That men have.
Do men have those conversations?
I don't know. You tell me.
I'm not sure about that. They do sometimes, but it's not an everyday conversation. But
no, well, it's not an everyday situation that they're in.
Right.
But you know, I think that's kind of my generation of guys who grew up with single moms and seeing their moms have to work and do all the home stuff and do just basically everything on their own, you know. They really saw firsthand how difficult it can be for women. And I think that gave them an understanding about life that maybe the previous generation didn't have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just improved as time has worn on. And suddenly we have stories where we talk about what women go through, and I think guys are more open to those types of stories now. But a character like Ben, he's actually really close to a friend of mine in Atlanta, and he told me this great story once, and I stole it for Will Trent.
Oh.
He got up in the middle of the night one night, and he went into the kitchen to get some milk, and his mother was in there, and there were all these dishes in the sink to wash, and she had started to cry because she'd been working all day and she was exhausted. And he said he never left dishes in the sink after that again.
Wow.
And I think that, you know, guys like that are just amazing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of guy I wanted Will Trent to be, and the kind of guy I wanted Ben to be. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Charlie's such a great character. She deserves a great guy.
So what are we going to see? I hear there's all kinds of options on your books. Do you have any idea what we're going to see on the big screen or on TV anytime soon?
Well, I have no idea. There's Will Trent's option, Cop Town is option. We're talking to people now about Good Daughter, and it's Hollywood.
Oh, God,
so who knows
really?
What's going to happen next, you know. So we'll see. That's all I can say with any certainty.
Oh, gosh, I was hoping you were going to tell me something. Something.
Sorry.
I know, but that's the way Hollywood is. You never know what's going to come up.
Yeah.
One time, you know, something becomes popular, and then they want all kinds of ones exactly like that. And you see 10 shows just like it.
Exactly.
I mean, when I'm half afraid when they do your books that they're not going to do you complete justice.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I've said no a lot, is I don't want someone who's going to change so many things that the readers feel like I've betrayed them, you know? So I've been really careful about who I've spoken with and who I've given options to. And Cop Town, actually, Charlize Theron's production group, Denver and Delilah, has an option now. And she's such an amazing woman. She has such a strong vision for what Cop Town should be. And, you know, everybody's seen Atomic Blonde, but she can kick some ass, so that's great. But, I mean, she really understands what I want to do in that book, which is amazing.
Absolutely. Now, you've had back trouble in the past. Are you still having back trouble, or how are you doing with your back?
I'm okay now. Like you, I have to spend a lot of time on the treadmill, work on my posture. Part of the problem was just sitting all the time writing books. So now I've got a treadmill desk, and I, unlike everybody else with a treadmill desk, I actually use it.
So do you think, you've said in the past about comparing men and women authors as far as graphic violence, that women are called to task on it more than men.
Uh-huh.
Like Jeffrey Deaver's books are always kind of graphic, and nobody says a word about his books.
No,
and yet when people meet you, they think, this woman is writing these books? Are we sure you have the right author here? I mean, people have said that to me. They're like, I can't believe that woman is the woman writing Blindsided in these really graphic books. Do you get that a lot from people?
Well, I do. And, you know, I think part of it is just crime writers in general tend to be pretty laid-back people. I mean, Mike Connelly is the sweetest guy you've ever met.
Oh, yeah.
And Jeff Deaver, too, is such a sweetheart. I mean, he shows dogs, for God's sakes. But I do think that people kind of expect me to be tougher or taller or something. But the thing is, I think that the reason people find me more graphic is that I work so hard to make sure you care about the characters. So when something bad happens, it's not just, you know, a paper cutout of a person who's been murdered. It's someone you care about as a reader and who maybe you identify with or think about as a real human being.
And you mentioned in this book about, you talk a little bit about the violence women and how it changes women, how they can never be the same after that. And it's a horrifying thought. I mean, their violence goes on every day all over the world, and you think that one act of violence like that could ruin somebody's life, and it just horrifies you to think about that. And
well, in that instance, I was talking about the crime of rape, and not just women. I mean, for men as well. Rape is to me a murder. Because it takes the ease you have as a person and it removes that. And it alters who you think of as yourself. And you're never that same person you were before it happened. But I would say that to a certain degree, any brush with crime, even as a witness, changes you in some way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in very small ways, you know, if you're mugged or even if you see a mugging, it makes you less free in the world. And a violation like rape, I mean, to me, I've talked to a lot of women. Fortunately, I've never experienced that. I mean, I've certainly been groped on airplanes and flashed and all the things that women have to
really
put up with. But, God, absolutely. But you should ask any woman in your life if she's ever been flashed or groped. I think you'll be surprised.
Really? I don't really think about it.
Why would you?
Yeah.
You're not a groper. And,
yeah, that's true.
You know, so you're not going to be groped.
But sometimes I like to touch people, and I think to myself, oh, I'm going to give that person the wrong idea if I touch them too much.
Well, you're not touching them in the wrong place.
No. But, I mean, even in the right place, sometimes it gets people weird nowadays. You know,
yeah.
It's like you never really
true.
Know.
Well, you never know who's touched them an hour before, right?
That's certain. So you're saying that writing all these books has affected you psychologically?
I think that it's made me, as a woman, more in tune with the things that women put up with every day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be really interesting to me if you could, like, have an invisible person follow around women every day and just see the kind of stuff they put up with, you know, told to smile more or just in general stuff like that. And of course I'm a feminist, but in some ways it's like, oh my God. I mean, if you think about the fact that from the age of zero until the age of 45, according to FBI statistics, if you look at the reasons for mortality of women in this age group, homicide is always going to be in the top five.
Wow.
So, and if she's pregnant, it's the number one reason for mortality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I wasn't writing about this stuff and looking at statistics and talking to police officers and looking at victims of crime and all that, I don't think it would make me as, I would be as aware. It would just be something that you can, I think if women thought about this all the time, they probably wouldn't leave the house, right?
But no, probably not.
It's a dangerous thing to be a woman.
Hmm. You're one of the most fascinating authors I've ever talked to, and because there's so much to you, and you're such a smart, intelligent woman, and you couldn't write these books without being intelligent. I mean, these are just so thought-provoking and so amazingly intense. I mean, and I've decided I should read your book from beginning to end and never and just not stop at all, because I think I get more out of them that way.
Well, thank you.
But the only problem is I get done it fast, and then I have nothing left to read.
Well, that's true. But I remember when I first met you at VoucherCon years ago, and you had your little tape recorder going around. So I think we've both done pretty well.
Yeah, I think we have. And you're one of those authors, I think to myself, I can't wait to see what she's going to write next. I cannot wait to see that. And even the title of your next book is a thrill to me. I think, I wonder what that's about. You know, that's the first thing we think of. When we hear the title, we think, what is it? What's the book about? What do you think it's about? You know, and you probably can't even talk about your next book now.
No, but I can't. I can say it won't be a Will Trent.
It won't be a Will Trent.
Yeah, because the story for the next Will Trent is a bit complicated, and I've got to do some more research. But right. I hope people enjoy it anyway.
Well, it's amazing you know all this stuff in advance. You know exactly what you have to do. It's like you have your whole life planned out. You know exactly what's going to happen next and where you're going next. But you will have a book every year, though, you think?
Yes, absolutely.
That's terrific. I know we have to let you go because you have another interview.
Yeah.
You have another thing coming up. It's been absolutely a treat, as always. The new book's called The Good Daughter. It's out tomorrow in all your bookstores and ebooks and everything. And that last breath is amazing. I love that story. So,
thanks, David.
Thank you. This has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time. Thank you.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.